He's a physician trained in occupational environmental medicine, and he works on a variety of topics.
Thanks very much, Ronnie, and good morning, everybody. I'm going to be telling just one piece of this story, as David mentioned, which is one specific drug-resistant bacteria that is emerging right now and is of great concern. Before I go into it, I just want to acknowledge Dr. Rebecca Goldberg, one of my colleagues, and Dr. James Keck, who helped me to put this presentation together, and let you know that I don't have any financial conflicts of interest in this presentation. So I'm going to tell the story of methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus and its relationship specifically to pig farming and the emergence of this problem in Europe and also how it looks to be an emerging problem now in the United States. So I want to really try to make this into a story. And the story starts with what David mentioned, the fact that in the United States, in Europe, in industrial agriculture, we use a tremendous amount of antibiotics in the raising of our meat and livestock. Now, there's a lot of reasons why pigs are really similar to human beings. Biologically, it's true. We have really similar stomachs and skins. I think that a lot of people think that the kind of character that we attribute to pigs is somewhat similar to humans. But it's also true in terms of the antibiotics. When we look at the antibiotics that are used in the different kinds of livestock, it turns out that 95% of the fairly massive amount of antibiotics given to pigs are actually human use antibiotics, very, very similar. And so if we were to see a problem of cross-resistance of bacteria coming from animals and spreading into humans, pigs would be a good place to see that. Just to go a little bit into detail and background on what is, we keep calling this MRSA. MRSA stands for methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. Methicillin is one of the relatively newer penicillins. I'll tell you about when that came into being. And unfortunately, Staphylococcus aureus tends to develop resistance very quickly. And when it is resistant to methicillin, it's resistant to a good number of the only antibiotics that are effective to it. We are left with a very small number of antibiotics that that can still be used because methicillin resistance confers this resistance to a lot of the cephalosporins and other penicillins. So the history goes back to the history of penicillin. Just about as soon as we started using penicillin, even before it was really being used widely in hospitals, Staphylococcus aureus developed resistance. Within years of the introduction of penicillin, to be able to try to combat that, we've been in this chase ever since. In 1960, pretty long time ago, methicillin was introduced for use primarily in hospitals. 1961. Staphylococcus aureus was resistant to it. And then throughout the 60s, we started seeing multiply resistant MRSA, not just to methicillin, but also to other kinds of antibiotics. We'll talk about that in a second. The important part of the story is that for most of its life, MRSA, or methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, was primarily a problem in hospitals, especially in intensive care units. And people felt, well, this is just a problem because we use so many antibiotics in the hospital, and the staph that would be on the skin of the patients, you know, would get onto the surfaces, would get into the clothing. And it was really, for the most part, isolated within hospitals for many, many years, for decades. But then in the 1990s, we started seeing something called community-acquired methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. Now, was this due to human-use antibiotics? We don't really track the origination of these sorts of epidemics. And then we know that in the last few years, we've seen really an epidemic of community methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. It's gotten a lot of attention in the United States with the number of school children dying from invasive methicillin-resistant Staph aureus infections, highly publicized cases around the country. So there's kind of been two different leaps. One was just from the hospital out into the community in the 1990s, and then something else has been going on, certainly in this country. If you talk to people who work in emergency rooms, they never saw a significant number of MRSA cases coming into the emergency room 5 years ago. Now it's one of the most common things that they're seeing. So there's been an extra little leap. With this leap in the United States that we've seen out in the community, there's also been this kind of rapidly growing scientific literature linking MRSA, a specific kind of MRSA, to colonization of pigs in Europe. And we're starting to see that evidence come to the United States now. So just briefly again on MRSA, the most common thing that's seen is a skin infection, a boil like this somewhat disgusting picture. Sorry for those of you who don't, this is a doctor thing to put up pussy pictures in the morning. But that's the most common thing, and this is what people see in emergency rooms, are these very difficult to treat skin infections that often require prolonged courses of antibiotics. But very importantly, MRSA can also cause invasive infections. It can cause systemic infections, bacteremia, pneumonia, a whole host of other, and I'll talk about those again in a second. And so in the last decade, MRSA has become actually a really significant public health problem. The first study that kind of tried to tally this up came out a couple of years ago and showed that the death toll of MRSA is actually higher than the death toll of AIDS in this country. Now, this is not all community-acquired MRSA by any means. MRSA is still a scourge of intensive care units. The majority of this is still in-hospital nosocomial infections. But a growing proportion of this, and you know, young, healthy people, are also succumbing. So it's kind of a huge burden in terms of the mortality, morbidity, mostly in hospitals, but there's this growing mortality and morbidity going on within within the community. So the story jumps to the Netherlands, and the really kind of tragic stories of this link between agricultural misuse of antibiotics and antibiotic resistance in humans usually happens in a place where there's some kind of unusual circumstance. For example, in the 1990s, some of the Scandinavian countries used an unusual animal antibiotic called avoparcin. And avoparcin is an analog of vancomycin, which just happens to be the one drug that works on MRSA. Nobody else was using avoparcin. Enterococcus is a very serious nosocomial infection, and vancomycin is one of the most important drugs to treat it. So in Scandinavia, all of a sudden they started seeing outbreaks and increasing rates of vancomycin-resistant enterococcus, where they were using the avoparcin. Wasn't seen anywhere else. Same kind of thing is true in the Netherlands. In the Netherlands, that country instituted a very, very rigorous, stringent search and destroy policy for MRSA, where they tested people in hospitals coming in, they treated them aggressively, and so the background rates of MRSA colonization in the population were incredibly low, much lower than anywhere else, less than 1%. In that kind of a setting, it was easier to detect a new kind of insurgence, if you will, of resistant bacteria, and so a number of studies have come out of the Netherlands making this case of this connection between the development of MRSA colonization in pigs and the spread to humans. And the question arises, and as you look at the studies that I'm going to show you, there's kind of three things I want to try to provide as lines of evidence for the spread of MRSA from pigs to humans. Because there's a question, okay, so there's MRSA in pigs and humans. Did it go from the pigs to the humans or from the humans to the pigs? So the first thing would be, if we could have shown this massive pig reservoir and no humans colonized with the MRSA, and then we started seeing it in the humans, we could get that temporality. That would be very convincing. Unfortunately, we weren't looking. So one piece of evidence is to see the rate of colonization in pigs and who is it showing up in the human population. Is it showing up, you know, is this type seen in everybody, or is it just seen in people who may have been exposed to pigs? And the second thing is to look at the co-resistance. David mentioned that when a bacteria gets resistant to an antibiotic, it tends to get resistant to multiple antibiotics. And so humans and pigs, although humans are given a lot of human-use antibiotics, they're given human-use antibiotics that are slightly different from what most of the human population gets. And humans get some things that pigs don't get. So if you look at the spectrum of other resistance in the type that we're seeing, that can give a clue as to whether it's coming from pigs or humans. So I just want to give that as a little background as we buzz through some studies very quickly. So this was one of the early studies, and this is a little bit of a Netherlands Rorschach, I apologize, but one critical piece of science is that we are talking about one specific kind of, one subspecies, one type of MRSA. All these bacteria have all kinds of different subspecies, And it's called a non-typable. It's a type that was a little difficult for the usual ways of detecting and identifying the subtype. So it's called non-typable MRSA, or sometimes it's called ST398. So you're going to see that. That's the one that's associated with pigs. There's lots of MRSA in the community. And again, that's not coming from pigs. That's coming from human use. But this is one specific kind that we're seeing emerging. So on the left, that's a graph of the pig density in the red and the non-typable MRSA density in those blue dots. And you can see in a kind of Rorschach way that the big blue dots are where the pigs are highest. And if you look at the typable MRSA cases, they're tending to cluster more where the people are highest. Just a kind of qualitative look. This was a study that was done in a hospital in the agricultural part of the Netherlands, looking at the rates of typable and non-typable MRSA. And they started becoming aware of this non-typable MRSA in 2005, 2006, and started testing more aggressively for it. So this is not just a kind of spontaneous slide of this massive upgrowth. It's really an indication of what happens when you look. And just showing that in this area, again, in the agricultural area, when they started looking, they found an incredibly high number of the non-typable cases. This was another study that was done out of the Netherlands. Sorry about the picture. That's actually Floyd carnage. It's not related to MRSA, but that was put in there by someone making the slide for me. So this is a study that was trying to look at rates of MRSA in the animals, in the abattoirs, in the slaughterhouses, finding very high rates of contamination of the slaughterhouses with MRSA. And that's one of the ways in which the bacteria could be spread from contaminated animals or colonized animals to other animals. Very importantly, all of the isolates tested were resistant to tetracycline, and tetracyclines are used to a very, very high degree in pigs. I took out the slide for time purposes, but there's another slide looking at that idea of what is the spectrum of antibiotics to which these bugs are resistant, and the ST398 that's found in pigs, and in humans, I'm sorry, tended to be resistant to tetracycline, whereas the other kinds of MRSA found in humans tended to be resistant to ciprofloxacins and other kinds of antibiotics that are used more in humans than in the animals. So one other line of evidence. Again, a third study that went out onto the farms found, again, a rate 20, a lot of these studies are showing 20-30% of the farms colonized, and for looking at farms that were using antibiotics versus farms that were using a smaller number of antibiotics, found a greatly increased odds ratio of 30 for this specific kind of MRSA. This was a study out of Belgium that was going and looking at the farmers themselves. And there's just a kind of simple 2x2 table there showing that where there weren't MRSA found, where there wasn't MRSA found in the pigs, the rate of colonization in the farmers was extremely low. Conversely, where the highest rate of colonization in the humans, that bottom right was where there was also MRSA found in the pigs. This is another Dutch study now looking at actual meat samples. I'm getting there. The main point I want to make from this is, number one, a lot of the focus on antibiotic-resistant bacteria from agricultural antibiotics is focused on the foodborne pathogens and enteric infections. And one of the things that's really important is we haven't been looking as carefully at MRSA because MRSA is not considered an enteric pathogen. So the surveillance isn't the same for it. The attention being paid isn't the same for it. When you do go into the supermarket, you do find very high rates of colonization of the meat. All it takes is hand contact with that meat and then touching the face, which is where MRSA lives, to colonize the human. The other point to be made here is that it is not just pigs. MRSA has been found in cattle, and the more we look in other kinds of animals, the more we're seeing it. And these are just, again, the ST398 is not all of MRSA. It's a small fraction of the MRSA we're seeing at this point, but it is associated with some of the more clinical, severe clinical outcomes that you see here. Again, most of the studies being done in other countries. So what about the United States? The story starts in the Netherlands, but it's starting to spread. The story is spreading because we're starting to look in the United States. just a couple of studies so far, one in Ontario showing a very high rate of colonization of farms and pigs, and of course we import a lot of pigs. There's a lot of trade of pigs between Canada and the United States. And then one fresh study, not yet published, just in abstract form at this stage, showed looking at a couple of farms in Iowa and in Illinois, again showing a very high rate of colonization of swine on 7 farms associated with one big farmer, and some preliminary data that there is colonization of the workers. So the real question here is a question of surveillance. We haven't been looking for this in the United States. We're trying to now get the United States to start looking for it. There's funding. This is the first step in trying to figure out the extent of the problem, is actually getting a scope. How common is this? Where is it seen? And so this is what we need to be doing. Establishing the baseline through surveillance, through looking at the food. As I said, the FDA is only looking at the enteric infections. Things like MRSA and other kinds of infections are not being considered in their risk assessments. That needs to change. And then lastly, we need to be taking a precautionary approach to this and reducing the use of antibiotics overall in farm animals when we don't need to be using it because they're sick. So thank you very much for your attention, and hopefully we'll have time for questions at the end. Thanks.